Hello, and welcome back to the Glossy Week in Review podcast. I'm your host, senior fashion reporter Danny Parisi, and I'm here with our editor-in-chief, Jill Manoff. Hello, Jill.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Good talking to you. Thank you for being here. We have a very fun episode this week. We're going to be talking about Express potentially filing for bankruptcy soon. I always feel bad when I'm like, we have a fun episode. This company's going bankrupt.
I should really.
I should wait to say if it's going to be fun until after I say what the topics are.
Layoff.
Sorry to Express. Express is potentially filing for bankruptcy sometime in the next week. So we'll talk a little bit about what led them there. We'll talk about PVH's earnings this week, which had some mixed results. There were some good things and some bad things in there. And then finally, we will talk about layoffs at Amazon's retail division and what that means for sort of their physical retail ambitions and that kind of stuff. Actually, not a very fun episode now that I'm saying it out loud. It's a lot of doom and gloomy kind of stuff, but that's okay. Let's start by talking about Express. So Express is reportedly going to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy sometime in the next week. I remember a year or two ago writing a story about how they were very close to being delisted from the New York Stock Exchange because their share price had gotten too low. Do you remember that, Joel?
I do indeed.
It was like, and they did this maneuver where they basically halved the number of shares that existed and doubled their price. So it's like, ultimately, it's the same thing, but it made each individual share more valuable. And that kind of temporarily kept them from being taken off the stock exchange. Didn't last forever, though. And it felt kind of desperate at the time because last month in March, they were delisted completely from the New York Stock Exchange. So it seems like they're having a really tough time. They've got like $300 million in debt. I don't know. I have some thoughts on this, but why don't you start, Joe? What do you think is like led Express to be in this moment?
Eep. Yeah. I mean, I feel so sad. I feel like I grew up with Express, and I feel like they were always kind of the go-to, along with, I guess, back in the day, like the Limited, that like the go-to when you get your first job. They had great workwear. Then they kind of diversified where they were doing some, I don't know, I would say quality denim for the price, denim, casual wear, even like club wear. So they diversified. But I do think what's happening here, along with the way that malls are changing and mall traffic is on the rise. It's not where it was. It's doing great, but it's the malls that are outdoor malls, and it's the the stores within these thriving malls are changing as well. So they're like, I'm seeing a lot of Aloe Yogas opening up and some of these sexier brands. Well, anyway, Express is in this middle territory where they're not Shein, they're not Temu, they're more pricey, but also they're not luxury. So we talk about this space a lot in terms of how it's impacting contemporary brands. And we can talk about it as it's affecting Calvin Klein and Tommy, because they're not exactly high-end luxury, but they're in this weird space. Express has not, like, they haven't been stagnant. You can tell that they're like trying to make a go of it. It's been going on for years where they're trying new things. Like, our traditional model isn't working. Let's evolve. Let's try this. And first of all, they've acquired some sexy direct-to-consumer brands, Bonobos. They've started a sexy DTC brand of their own, Upwest, that had a sustainability slant. But they've also launched Rental in 2019. I talked about their influencer collaborations with Olivia Culpo and Rocky Barnes. Updated their product assortment. They've tried social selling. They've had an affiliate program called Style Editors, where they're the kind of influencers that were out there selling on behalf of Express. So they've been moving and they've been trying things. And on the subject of malls, they've tried the small format stores. I think it was called The Edit or something like that. So they've made movement there. So, and maybe it's too little too late. Poor Express, but when we talk about brands that are struggling, you're like, well, yeah, they're just sitting there like this isn't resonating anymore. I think their product pricing is what's not resonating anymore. And maybe they're not able to move as fast as some others because of their size and their setup. But what do you think?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I'm on the same page as you. The positioning of Express as sort of, you know, more expensive than a fast fashion, but not as prestigious or luxurious as a luxury brand, definitely feels like that puts them in a hard place. You mentioned Calvin and Tommy are kind of in a similar space. But then at the same time, there are some brands that I feel like do also match that, that are doing really well, like Abercrombie. Like you mentioned mall brands. Not every mall brand is facing the same problems. Like Abercrombie is doing insanely well. I think American Eagle is still doing pretty well too. And I kind of think of them as sort of in the same, you know, field as Express. So I think it's a combination of like that space being really tough to be in, but it's not impossible because some brands are doing well. I think it's a combination of that and maybe some poor decision-making on their own part. I saw that in, I think, December, their executive team had talked a little bit about their merchandising strategy needing work. I think it was like in 2022, their men's business did really well and their women's business didn't. And then in 2023, it was the opposite. So it's like, it feels like they're reacting to these merchandising issues instead of predicting and having the right inventory when they need it, you know? So I think it's a little bit of, yeah, I said it, but a little bit of the climate and the space they're in that's really tough. And also they're not playing that space very well compared to some other brands who are.
And also their stores weighing them down. They have more than 500 between outlet locations and full price stores. Oh, that's a lot. And one of the kind of, I guess, ways of getting out of this predicament is to file for bankruptcy, which lets companies kind of shed their expensive leases and or they can find a buyer and sell. So we'll see.
Yeah, I definitely think the humongous fleet of stores is a huge drag. Stores are so expensive. And like, I know that they're valuable. And for a lot of brands, it's a worthy investment. But whenever I see a company that has like 500 stores, I'm like, there's no way that that's it. It can work if they're all doing well. But I feel like as soon as you start to like have issues, that's so expensive. You know, that's a huge overhead that you have to deal with. Whereas if maybe you have a smaller fleet, it's not quite as, I don't know, terrifying when you're suddenly your sales are down and you've only have five or six stores or maybe a dozen or something. You've got 500 stores to operate and thousands of people. It just feels like that's really hard.
Yes, so agree. We talk about direct-to-consumer and the state of direct-to-consumer. Express is an OG direct-to-consumer brand. Like they own their own stores. They're selling, you know, largely to start through stores, but also an online business. I have a hunch it'll go the route of a lot of these other OG mall brands like BB, which I'm getting pitches for now. They're a full-on online only. And I don't know who is shopping for them and like what the demo is and how they're doing. ? But like, we don't know all of the things that brands are saying about what's working to acquire customers. Like, do brands know what Express stands for? I don't know. Like, what is their brand and what resonates with people? Right. Like, they don't have a strong brand in terms of who they are and what they love, what they value.
It's kind of harsh, but I sort of think of their brand as just clothes, which is not a great, you know, I don't feel like there's a specific, I don't know, yeah, image or vibe, or it's just, like you mentioned, workwear. I feel like that used to be a really, you know, defining trait of theirs. But now I'm like, is that even, do people go to Express for work clothes? I don't know.
I got to know more feels about like men's shopping habits. Did you ever have like friends that bought workwear there? Because I tell you what, I mean, this is going on like 15, 12 years ago. But being a stylist in St. Louis, if we were doing like a commercial ad and we just needed men's clothing, like I often went to Express for men's button downs because like all the pinning and stuff that has to make it look good. They always had this great, I guess, signature button down that had a little stretch to it. It looked good on everybody. So I always shopped it. Yeah. That's interesting. And I told you, I recently, within the last 3 years, got my winter coat at Express and it was kind of, it had like military big gold buttons. It's sharp. I like it. I still wear it.
Yeah, I definitely knew, I have bought stuff there and I knew people who, like men who did as well. But I feel like now, you know, you and I have talked about Banana Republic a lot as being a brand that's like, that's kind of what, if I was like, I really need some professional looking clothes to wear to some work thing and I needed them like immediately, I would probably go to Banana Republic. And actually in my neighborhood in Queens, there is, I actually don't think it's still there anymore, but there used to be a Banana Republic and an Express directly across from each other. So these two definitely were like kind of in the same vein. I feel like Banana Republic is more that to me now.
Yes.
And then we mentioned Abercrombie, like point. That's maybe more the casual side, like you might go there. So it just feels like there's not something where you would go to Express for that you wouldn't go to some other brand first.
That's true. You know what I mean? And maybe like when I'm talking about all the new things that they're trying, like maybe they're trying too much. Like they haven't honed in on one area where it's like, if I need a great top, I'm going to go to Express. Or I need a great pair of jeans, I'm going to go to Abercrombie, whatever. I'm checking out their site now to see if it looks modern and current. I mean, not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah.
All right. We can move on, but I do think a lot of the same things that we're talking about with Express could also apply to Calvin and Tommy. So let's talk about PVH, which had their earnings this week. The earnings were interesting because their net income like doubled. It increased a lot from $138 million to $271 million. This is for the fourth quarter of 2023, or I guess fiscal 2023. So whatever, the last quarter. So that's their net income, but their revenue was actually flat. And I think Calvin and Tommy in the U.S. especially fell by like 2% in terms of sales. So even though their net income was higher, I think that was mostly because of cost cutting, which you can only do so much of. So, you know, if their revenue is flat again in this quarter or in the next quarters and they can't cut any more costs, it's going to be down. And that's basically what they said. So they predict that this quarter sales are going to drop by 11% and for the whole year, maybe 6 or 7% down, which then immediately sent their share prices down 20%. Like, so even though this quarter's earnings weren't that bad, I think a lot of investors are feeling like, and the executive team kind of signaled that this year is going to be a tough one for them. But I feel like a lot of the same things we were saying about Express apply in that, you know, they're kind of in that in-between space between a luxury brand and a fast fashion brand. They're not really either. I feel like they have more of a cultural cachet than Express. Like, definitely. You know, I was saying I don't think of Express as having a brand that I can like sort of identify, whereas Calvin and Tommy like have these really distinct images in my mind, which also comes from decades of marketing and stuff. But I feel like they still have a strong image and identity. Yeah. I don't know. I'll stop there. What do you think?
I so agree. There are interesting elements. First of all, the fact that when they announced this lowered projection for the year, their stocks tanked along with, it's interesting to see like the, I think investors are scared these days. Like they are quick to jump. So when this happened, stocks of like VF Corp, it was reported, Tapestry, Ralph Lauren, they all fell at least 5%. We saw this also this week in the beauty sector where Ulta talked about, again, slower growth this year at the lower end of the year, at the lower end of its guidance. And at the same time that impacted e.l.f. by 12%, their stocks fell. Estee Lauder, Coty. So they all, anyway, God forbid anybody's seeing slow growth. I think that everybody's going to suffer because of that. But yes, in relation to, like you said, a lot of the same conversation, I think that these brands, Calvin Klein, Tommy, are brands that we report on a lot because they're doing forward innovative things on the marketing front. Tommy Hilfiger, we just had a story because of how they're aligning with athletes and the Olympics and sports-related influencers are having a moment. We did, I did like a LinkedIn newsletter on the Jeremy Allen White, Calvin Klein campaign, and that was huge. But yes, various factors at play here. Consumer spending changing in Europe and North America. Wholesale orders and revenue down, which is not particularly surprising. And then there was this this line or this statement by the CEO that was talking about expect it to be down. They're pulling out of some of the digital channels in Europe. And I'm like, I started poking around because I was like, well, do you have to? Is this like Matches Fashion? Is this Farfetch? Like, what are these digital channels? Question mark, question mark. They don't currently have a presence on Matches. I don't know if they did, but pretty significant presence on Farfetch, and in a way where they also talked about like higher margins and more quality sales, like the full price sales essentially. And they had, I forget the number, but it was like maybe 250 products full price on Farfetch. And that's all that's showing when you scroll. This is, I'm sorry. Is it Calvin or Tommy? Oh God, this is a horrible story. Anyway, the fact of the matter is at the bottom of the products, it's like, click here for sale products, and it goes to their sale products, and it's nearly 500. So it's definitely, maybe that's where its margins are hurting. And obviously you don't get the full margin when you're selling through a partner channel. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay. So a couple of things. I mean, I have heard from a couple of people that promotions and discounts are going to be, you know, big this year, just because there's constant problems with inventory management. I know that PVH is working on that because, like you said, they're chasing that high quality sales, the full price sales. They don't want to rely on discounts to move inventory, but that's a perennial challenge. The other thing is I wanted to mention the Jeremy Allen White campaign, which you mentioned was huge. PVH said that it drove 30% increase in underwear sales to Calvin Klein. In like the week or so after that, which obviously is, you know, every marketer would love to have a campaign that does that. They've done a good job, like you said, working with a lot of cool people. They had another campaign with Jennie Kim from Blackpink. I think that was earlier this year, or maybe late last year. And both of those celebrities that they chose are really good ones because they're like huge. They're in the zeitgeist right now, but they're maybe slightly more affordable just because they're like emerging in a way, you know, like Jeremy Allen White has just coming off like The Bear being a huge hit. And I think the Jennie Kim campaign also directly translated to some sales, but those are also just two campaigns in a, you know, in the bucket sort of. So I don't think you can like turn an entire giant publicly traded company around off of like a handful of marketing campaigns, but it definitely feels like those were impactful. And whoever is making those decisions behind the scenes to get Jeremy Allen White is a genius. And so if they can keep consistently doing stuff like that, then that'll be great. But just off that one campaign or a few, I think is not enough. Again, it's a humongous company.
Totally. But quite the dip. It's interesting. I mean, taking it back to Express, so PVH wants to focus on full price sales, and we know there's the price conscious consumer now. When I was poking on Express's site, it was the whole like homepage hero was about like outfits under $200, and they were pointing to price points of each of the items that were on the affordable side. So like, is this the right move? I don't know. We've talked a lot about the luxury consumer or the higher spend consumer and how they're more bulletproof at this point. But is that the Tommy and Calvin Klein consumer? Question mark, question mark.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. Any other thoughts? I think I've said everything I want to say about PVH, but
let's move on.
Yeah, move on. Okay. Cool. Last thing I want to ask about or talk about is Amazon. So Amazon had a bunch of layoffs this week, mostly focused on AWS. That's Amazon Web Services, which powers like every website in existence. But that also includes their physical store technology team and division there. And there were quite a lot of layoffs there as well. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Feels like Amazon has had a real back and forth with physical retail, because obviously they started as e-commerce. And then do you remember years ago, there were like the Amazon bookstores that was just like, there would be like one book on the shelf or on the wall even. It was like so weird. I don't know why. I don't know if that really caught on. And then they went really hard in on like Amazon groceries. There were those stores where you could just walk out with the food. And then it feels like now they're pulling away from that again. So I want to talk about Amazon in particular, but also like retail technology. I'm sort of like, a lot of like new technologies that I see at like ShopTalk or NRF or something on the show floor, I'm like, as a customer, as a retail customer, I'm like, nothing has really wowed me or has like really significantly changed the way a store works for me. It's sort of like, okay, you have nice stuff on the shelf and people there who can tell me about it. And like the lines aren't too long. You know, I'm like, that's all I really need. And it feels like some of that technology, do I really want to just grab something off the shelf and walk out? Like, I guess so, but it feels like that was a tough, I don't know, nut for them to crack. There was this very funny article in The Information that reported that that thing where you like just walk out, which they said was all automated, was actually just like 1,000 employees in India manually watching the videos and just writing down what you took.
Oh,
so
no.
It was like, yeah, it was that tech, I think, was like a Potemkin village. It was like made to look like it worked, but it really was just people behind the scenes working really long hours and manually reviewing. I think they said 700 out of every 1,000 purchases had to be manually reviewed.
Oh,
so it was
geez.
Like only part of them were actually being detected by this automated thing. Anyway, I'm rambling, but what are your thoughts on Amazon kind of like cutting some people from that division and then also retail tech, I guess?
Retail tech, yeah. I got a good, I took a read of Kale Weissman, editor-in-chief of Modern Retail's Amazon briefing yesterday, and he went deep on this idea that they are scrapping the just walk out system that was present in grocery stores. And it's interesting. He talked to some analysts and some experts about why it didn't work. And basically it's like any friction on in the shopper experience, it shouldn't happen at the beginning of the shopping trip. It should happen ideally as far to the end of the shopping trip as possible, if any friction exists. And there was some step where when you entered a store using this just walk out system, where basically you're checking out beforehand. So what's the point? Like, they're just like moving what you have to enter, maybe your credit card information, or there's some sort of a scan in process. I don't exactly know what that looks like. So this is going out. It reminds me, like, if you're working at Amazon, be aware of other teams that are working on something similar but potentially better, because there's talk about this Amazon Dash Cart system that's still in place and being invested in for stores. And the difference is you can also walk out without having an official checkout, but at the same time, you're able to scan somehow to view deals, see your receipt as you shop, know how much money you're saving with the sale items you pick and such. So there's still kind of, there's belief in this idea, but just walk out isn't it?
right.
Moving on. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And I saw that Amazon's next kind of focus for store technology is palm scanning, like
yes.
biometric stuff. And it's like it's kind of a similar idea where you like scan your palm. And I'm like, how is that better than just using my credit card or my phone? Like, I feel like it's the exact same level of convenience. And I feel less weird about them knowing what my hand looks like. I don't know. Like, do you want to go into Nordstrom and buy a bunch of clothes and pay with your palm? I don't really want to do that.
It was so futuristic. It's interesting. Like you said, like the consumer-facing technology, it seems like it's, I mean, unless I'm trying to think of how it could solve a problem that is actually there, like when everybody's waiting in line for an hour to go into the Zara fitting room. but
right.
The consumer facing
stuff. See, that's
a
real problem.
Yes, the consumer facing stuff is meh. But where I see like retail tech actually innovating and solving is like at the grocery store, when you see kind of those robots going up and down the aisles, like counting the merchandise, like that, nobody's doing that manually. And in the warehouses where supply and I guess, what am I saying? Just logistical stuff on the back end. That's
yeah.
where it's actually proving effective.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that kind of stuff, though, necessarily doesn't get as much attention or as much press, because it's just like, unless you are like a warehouse manager or something, you like probably, it doesn't impact your life that much. But you're right, that does seem where there's a lot of the innovation. I just think on the consumer side, I'm like, there hasn't been anything really groundbreaking to me in the last couple of years. I mean, I remember the first time I saw, this was years ago, but store employees like just checking you out right there with a phone instead of making you go to the cash register. I was like, that feels like a pretty big step. And, you know, that helped a lot with clienteling and making it feel more like, you know, you can be anywhere in the store. That felt like a pretty big step. But since then, I'm like, not sure what's another big tech on the, like you said, on the consumer facing side, even though I'm sure there's tons of innovation on the back end.
Yeah, that's interesting. You got to wonder, and I'm sure people have explored this, but like that robot in store idea that I was just mentioning about counting the inventory. I noticed when Amazon was talking about their layoffs for Amazon Web Services, it was almost, I'm always sus when the idea, when layoffs and mention of AI are mentioned in the same breath, basically. But yeah. A lot of the AI that these services are introducing are for brands to like be able to, their client, their partner brands to be able to offer things like chatbots and such. But I don't know, like what, sus. I'll just say that. And that's an awful lot of jobs to be lost, and in a short amount of time. They're saying don't worry, we're hiring thousands of employees. A lot of these employees that are being laid off are shifting to other departments and other projects, or you know, we'll consider them for the role first, or whatever, however they're spinning it.
And also, like, I think the connection for fashion brands is like, it's a little bit downwind, and that like Amazon has their own fashion stores, and I don't think there's, you know, palm scanning tech is going to immediately affect the rest of the industry. But I do feel like it's good to pay attention to what kinds of technologies coming out of big companies like Amazon. You never know, like in a couple of years, we might all be scanning our palms. But I think that's all the time we have this week. Jill, thank you so much. It's always great talking to you.
Thank you. So fun.
Don't forget to give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to this, because that helps us out so much. And don't forget to subscribe to the Glossy Podcast to hear interviews with industry insiders every Wednesday and week interview episodes every Friday. Jill, who's our next guest on the main Glossy Podcast?
Ooh, we're going to be talking shoes. I'll have on the co-founder and CEO of Lerude, Ricardo Lerude, on the podcast next week.
Sounds good. Well, tune in for that. And until then, thanks for listening.